Good morning. Today we're going to begin a new topic. We're going to try to read the first parak of Rambam's Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, which of course discuss and describe Yesodei HaTorah, and we will, Be'ezras Hashem, elaborate on a number of the important issues that emerge from these halachos. So, Perak Aleph, Halacha Aleph, Yesod ha-Yesodos ve'amud ha-Chachma Leida she'yesham matzui rishon v'hum amtzi kol nimtza v'chol ha-nimtzaim mishamayim v'aretz u'ma she'beinehem lo nimtzu ela mi'amitas himatz'o. So, the pillar of pillars and the column of the foundation of foundations and the pillar of wisdom is to know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a Matsui Rishon. He is the first existent. The first thing to note here is the usage of the term Leida, to know. This, of course, is known as the mitzvah of Emunah. The Rambam held that Emunah was one of the 613 mitzvos. It can be derived from the pasuk Anochi Hashem Elokecha Asher Hotzeisicha Me'aretz Mitzrayim. However, the Rambam does not use the word lahamin. He does not say that the mitzvah is lahamin, but rather the mitzvah is a leida sheyesham matzui rishon. So mitzvah, emunah, does not mean faith in the sense of a leap of faith or blind faith or the like, but rather the mitzvah of emunah is a mitzvah of yediyah. Now the truth is that in the standard editions of the Sefer HaMitzvos, the standard translation, the Ibn Tibbon translation, it says over there lahamin. However, in other places, the Rambam says Leida, and even in the Sefer Mitzvos, if you look, for example, at the Reb Chaim Heller translation, he translates that as Leida as well. And accordingly, it's consistent with the other examples. Now, if we accept that the mitzvah is Leida, then we can answer the question that the Rishonim ask on the Rambam. One of the questions that the Rishonim ask on the Rambam is how could there be a mitzvah of emunah? After all, if I believe, then I believe. There's no need for a mitzvah. And if I don't believe, then commanding me to believe is not going to help me believe. That is one of the questions. And one answer, or part of the answer, is what the Rambam says over here, which is that the mitzvah is leida, the mitzvah is to know. And what that would mean is that there's a ma'aseh mitzvah. There's a ma'aseh mitzvah to prove the existence of God. In fact, if you look at the Mor Nevuchim in the beginning of the second book of the Mora, he offers four proofs for the existence of God. The Rambam was not the first to offer proofs for the existence of God. Sadia Gaon before him did, as well as Rabbeinu Bachya in the Shar HaYichud of the Chovos Halvavos and others that both preceded him and followed him. And we'll talk more about both the Rishonim that support the Rambam's position about the mitzvah of Yediyah and proving God, as well as those who disagree, but that's what the Rambam said, that there's a mitzvah leida, and one is mekayim that mitzvah by proving the existence of God. There he offers four proofs, actually, for the existence of God. They're cosmological proofs, meaning to say that they're proofs which are based on the fact that we look at the universe, we look at nature, that which we're able to perceive, and from that we're able to derive the existence of God. One of the four proofs, some believe, is an ontological proof, but the Pashtus is all four are cosmological proofs. And the Rambam in Halacha Hey, which we'll get to shortly, indeed offers succinctly the basic presentation of the first proof, the first of the four proofs. Now, we mentioned a couple of shiurim ago that many of the Rishonim hold and derive from Sukkim, like V'ata Shlomo b'ni das Elokei Avicha, that there's a mitzvah of Yediyas Hashem. And what the Rambam here is saying is that one facet of Yediyas Hashem is this mitzvah, the mitzvah of Yediyah, the mitzvah of Emunah, Leida she'yesham matzui rishon. The Rambam holds this is also part of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem. Thus, the Rambam concludes Hilchos Tshuva with the famous statement, Davar yadua barur she'ein avas HaKadosh Baruch Hu nikshares belibo shel adam ad sheyishge batamid karaui v'yazov kol sheba'olam chutz mimenu kemo sheziva v'amar b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha ela b'deya sheyeda ehu. So So how is one mekayim avas Hashem? B'deya shiyadeihu. V'al pi hadeya, al pi ha'ava. To the extent of the knowledge that you have of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so is your love of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. As the Maral says, yediyah is milashon chibur. So therefore, im me'at me'at vim harbeh harbeh. Now, this is not the only way of achieving avas Hashem. The Rambam, for example, in Perek Beis of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah says, through the study of nature, and in Sefer HaMitzvos, he stresses something else. But here at Hilchos Tshuva, he says that to the extent that a person knows God and understands God, so will be their ava for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, he concludes, L'fikach tzarch Adam li'ached atzmo l'havinu l'askil b'chachmos usvunos hamodiyim lo es kono. Kefi kocho shiyesh ba'adam, lavinu lahasig, kemo shebiarnu b'hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, as we explained in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. Now this refers to Talmud Torah, but the Rambam here, l'chora, is stressing philosophy, and that's why he invokes Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah. And with this, the Rambam tells us what Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, and really Sefer Hamada, is doing in a work of halacha. The first four chapters of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah are chapters which discuss philosophy and science, and the question is, of course, what are they doing in Mishneh Torah? Mishneh Torah is a Sefer Halacha. And the answer is that the Rambam held that these are part of a Halacha. There is a Halacha, they have to know these things. It is part of the mitzvah of Leida Sheyesha Matzui Rishon, which is the mitzvah of Anochi Hashem Elokecha. It's a chelek of the mitzvah of Avas Hashem, as we just read at the end of Hilchos Tshuva. And moreover, it's a chelek in Talmud Torah. The Rambam writes at the end of the fourth chapter of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, after he completes his discussion of physics and metaphysics, the Rambam writes, V'inyane arba prakim elu shebechamesh mitzvos ha'elu. In other words, these four prakim which relate to five mitzvos, this is what the Chachamim call Pardes. Now, this is what we're going to be studying today. Parak Aleph of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah is Pardes. And how do I know that Pardes is a chelak in Talmud Torah? So we know that from Hilchos Talmud Torah. In Hilchos Talmud Torah, the Rambam writes, based on the Gemara, V'chai v'adam l'shalish zman limudo, shlish b'tar shebachsav, shlish b'tar shebalpeh, Vishlish yavin v'yaskil achris davar merishiso v'yotze davar midavar v'yivmeh davar lidavar v'yavin b'mido shatar nidreshes bahen ad sheyeda heyach hu'ikr hamidos v'heyach yotzi ha'asar v'amotor k'yotze bahen midvarim shalamad m'pi ha'shmua v'inyan zel nekra b'gemar. The Gemara says, chai v'adam l'shamish esli modo shlish b'mikra, shlish b'mishna, shlish b'gemara. And the Rambam then says, what's included in Gemara? So he writes, "Vanyanim anikraim pardes bechlal gemara hein." That which we call pardes is bechlal gemara, and what is called pardes? It's pardes includes philosophy, science, and philosophy. Now, of course, one has to be very careful. The Rambam writes in Hilchos, in Perek Dalet of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, the Omer ani. She'en ra'oi l'tayl b'pardes elamish nismale kriso lechem ubasar. The lechem ubasar zeh hu leida biur ha'asur v'amutar kiyote bahen mishar ha'mitzvos. That the only person who is fit to study pardes, to study esoteric wisdom, is someone who's already filled himself up with lechem ubasar. And what does lechem ubasar correspond to? It corresponds to halacha, Torah Sanigla, Leida Isser v'amutar. He says the same thing in his Hakdamah to the Mar Nevuchim. Now, what does that mean, Leida Ha'isser v'amutar? Does this mean that the Rambam held that you have to absolutely master Torah Sanigla before you could begin the study of esoteric wisdom? Or no, perhaps he just means Leida. It doesn't mean to say you know everything, but you know the basics. This is a dispute. The simple reading is he doesn't say you have to have absolute mastery, though there is a statement from Rav Elchanan Wasserman. This could be found in Kobe Chiyurim, and it's supposed to be in your source book on page 7, but for some reason it disappeared. And there Rav Elchanan says that there's a machlokes rishonim about whether or not there's a mitzvah to try to prove the existence of God philosophically. Some say yes, like the Rambam and Rabbeinu Bachya, and some say no. But Rav Elchanan says that everybody would agree in our time that it's inappropriate to try to prove the existence of God and to be mekayem the mitzvah as articulated by the Rambam and Rabbeinu Bachya and the Sefer HaChinuch and Rasag and the like, because they only said that position b'makom de lo shchichi hazeka, and we now are in a situation where shchichi hazeka, it's too dangerous to engage in this type of philosophical speculation. And moreover, Rav Elchanan says, we're not mekayem what the Rambam himself says, that before you could be metalba pardes, you have to be nismale kriso lechem ubasar. So apparently Rav Elchanan understood that that means a very, very broad knowledge of Torah Sanigla. And nobody nowadays, Rav Elchanan says, has been nismale kriso lechem ubasar. Others disagree. They say, no, the Pashas and the Rambam is what he says. Leida ha'asar v'amutar. You have to know, have a working knowledge of halacha. Like the Rambam continues over there. V'afal pi shedvarim elu davar katan karu osam chachamim. Even though leida sa'asar v'amutar, even though the lechem u'basar is considered davar katan, right? The Gemara says that havayos d'abayi v'rava are davar katan as opposed to ma'is b'reishis and ma'is merkava, which are davar gadol. Nevertheless, afal pichein ruuyin hein lahakdiman shehein miyashvin dato shel adam tchila. You have to do those first, namely Torah Sanigla, because they settle one's mind down. They teach you how to think. Va'od shehein atov agdola sheshpia kadosh baruch hu liyishuv haolam hazeh kedei linchol chay olam haba v'efshar sheyedayim hakol. Everyone could understand the dvarim katanim gadol v'katan ish v'isha. Baalev Rachav uBaalev Katzar. Hilchos Yisod Yatar Perek Dalet.
Where's the Kobitshira?
Yes, Kobitshira Mechelek Beis. I'll give you the exact Mar Makom. Unfortunately, it was on the. You see, there's a blank on page 7, so that's where it was, but the disappeared. But I'll tell you later the exact Tzion. I forget where. Okay. Now there's another variant. Yes.
Does Rambam understand that the Arminim was in the parties means that they were contemplating like either Noni and Buddha?
Yes.
Is that like, I guess, consistent with like others who would say that it was more than a Kabbalah?
Yes. Consistently. In other words, Rambam, like we said before, understands Ma'aseh Bereishis, Ma'aseh Merkava as referring to physics and metaphysics, as he explains in Hilchos Yisod HaTorah. And of course, the Mekubalim understand that it's referring to Kabbalah. He does, but he also says Leida Sa'asar Vesamutar. If you want an example of a presentation of the opposing view, you could look at Rav Aaron Lichtenstein's article in the Green Book. So he argues that the Ram Leida Sa'asar Vesamutar does not mean you're Talmud Chacham, and the indication from Talmud Chacham is very, could mean very different things. But it doesn't mean that you've mastered it entirely. And if you look at the introduction, the letter of the Mor Nevuchim, where he says the same idea, it doesn't seem like he's writing to someone who's a great Talmud Chacham. But you could say that that's Eis Lasos Lashem, that wasn't ideal, that's what the Rivash claims. So, This is an old discussion. Yes.
Does the Rav not under the opinion that the Rav didn't feel that he could prove God?
We'll talk about the Rav's position. We'll get to it. The Rav definitely did not think that the Rambam held that. The Rav held that nowadays in the post-Kantian world, the nature of that mitzvah is different, and it's not helpful to try to prove God, considering contemporary philosophical trends. That's very different than saying that was not what the Rambam held. The Rav certainly agreed that the Rambam held that you did need to prove. The Rav just held that Bizman Hazeh, things are different. And we're going to talk about what the Rav meant, and is that really true, and the like. We'll get there, Bezos Hashem. Yes?
Even if one disagrees with the Rambam's interpretation of Pardes and Marzipan, you could still say, one could still say that there's still a mitzvah.
No? That's true. The two points are not mutually exclusive. Absolutely. Okay. Another important diuk that emerges from this line in the Rambam that kol hanimtzaim mishamayim va'aretz u'ma shebeinam lo nimtzu elam mi'amitas himatz'o, anything that exists in the entire universe only exists because of the truth of his existence. The Rav made a very interesting and important diuk from here, and you could see it on page 9 of your source books in endnote number 1. Rabbi Tursky, Rabbi Meir Tursky, writes in an article in Torah Web, commenting on this halacha, Judaism does not recognize a natural moral independent of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source for all, of all morality. Rambam opens his magnum opus by declaring that the fundamental principle which underlies all others and the pillar of all wisdom is knowing of the existence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, creator of heaven and earth. Rav Soloveitchik Zatzal commented that the Rambam clearly indicates that all wisdom depends upon knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, i.e., there is no ethical or moral knowledge independent of him. Meaning to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the source of all existence, and that means, among other things, it's not just the physical existence that God is responsible for, but all existence. And therefore, there could not be any moral that's independent of God. There could not be a moral authority that God is held accountable to, because that would imply that there's a wisdom, there is an existence, there is something which limits, which is outside of God and limits God. And Einod Milvado, there is nothing outside of God, there is nothing that limits God. God is the source of all existence, and that too can be derived from this halacha. Now, if that's the case, you have to figure out how to explain psukim like Hashofet Kol Aretz Lo Yaseh Mishpat, where seemingly Avraham Avinu holds HaKadosh Baruch Hu to a standard. And if you look at that article from Rabbi Tursky, it's not so much of a kasha. The pashup shat in what that means is that based on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's own actions elsewhere, or own giluyims, Avraham Avinu was asking essentially that you're contradicting yourself, but not that there's an external ethical standard which God is held accountable to. Now, when discussing this point, we have to distinguish between two questions which are very frequently confused. The two questions are, A, is there an ethic independent of God? And B, is there an ethic independent of halacha, or an ethic independent of Torah? The first question, is there an ethic independent of God? What the Rav was saying is absolutely not, categorically not. Ein od milvado, God is the source of all existence, and thus there's no ethic independent of God. Then there is a second question, which is there an ethic independent of halacha, or an ethic independent of Torah? And that's a very different question. We'll talk about that question in just a moment. Parenthetically, though, with respect to the first question, the question of is there an ethic independent of God, in secular philosophy, this is often known as the Euthyphro dilemma, which is found in the discussions of Plato. And the Euthyphro dilemma is generally presented as the following. Is there an ethic independent of God, or the way Plato put it, of the gods, but we'll put it in our terms. Is there an ethic independent of God, which according to this would mean that God could be held accountable to a standard? Or option B is what is known as divine command ethics, which means that something is only ethical if God said so. It's divine command. It's ethical if God said so. Now, I think that this is sort of a false choice. I think the pashup shot is that Torah rejects both of these approaches. The first approach, as we mentioned, is inconceivable because it contradicts the unity of God. It implies that something else exists outside of God. However, the second possibility isn't precise as well, because we indeed hold that God's will, his being, is moral and rational, that he acts and he wills according to particular standards. In other words, by virtue of his own essence, certain things not only shall not be willed by him, but cannot be willed by him. The pasuk in Habakkuk, for example, says, "Tahori na'im miros ra, v'hibit el amal lo tuchal." He can't. Sadiq v'yashar hu. Now, this isn't so simple, as we'll talk about a little later. The Rambam, in the continuation of these chapters, explains that HaKadosh Baruch Hu it's inconceivable that there be positive attributes associated with God. It's a contradiction to Achdus to call a Kaddish Baruch Hu a Rachon L'Chanon. And what does that mean with respect to this question? But the Pashup Shot is, it's not divine command ethics in the sense that it's only ethical because God commanded it and God could have commanded something else. No, by his very nature, God is Tzaddik V'Yashar Hu, and he couldn't be unfair or unjust. And we'll see this manifested in another sense in just a moment. Now, in terms of the second question we alluded to, is there an ethic independent of halacha, or is there an ethic independent of Torah? So that is an interesting question, and it's not so clear. There are many sources that indicate the existence of some form of natural morality. The Gemara in Erevin on Kuf Amud Beis famously says that if the Torah wasn't given, we could learn modesty from the cats who cover their excrement, and we could learn the prohibition against stealing from ants who don't steal from each other. We could learn chastity from a dove, etc., etc. So what we see here is that a person is capable of determining the propriety of actions. A person is capable of determining that which is right and moral and ethical without the Torah, simply, in this case, by looking at nature. A classical example of this is perhaps the destruction of the city of Stone. The city of Stone was destroyed. Why? The Pasuk in Yechezkel tells us, because they didn't do tzedakah. As the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos says, Ha'omer Shali Shali V'Shalcha Shalcha Zumi Das Dom. Now, it's not one of the seven mitzvos b'nei Noach, and yet they're held accountable for this. We see then clearly that human beings are expected to understand that certain things are right and wrong, and they're held accountable whether or not there has been a divine command. In fact, the Ramban at the beginning of last week's Parsha, Parshas Noach, writes, as well as Rabbeinu Bachya, why is it that lo nechtam gzardinam shel dor hamabul elam ipnei hagezel? It's because gezel is min ha-mitzvos hamuskalos. And therefore, even if they hadn't received any sort of revelation, they could have independently figured out that stealing is wrong. Now, what is a very interesting question, and much less clear, is whether there's an ethic independent of Torah or halacha post-Matan Torah. The Gemara in Erevin says if the Torah wasn't given, we would have learned modesty from a cat. But now that the Torah has been given, perhaps there is no basis to looking for morality any place other than Torah. Nitna Torah v'nischad shehalacha, and there is no basis for that. Or no, perhaps there still is a basis, and this leads to a discussion of Lifnim Mishur Sadin and the like. And this Bezras Hashem is a topic that we'll return to a little bit later on in the year when we talk about the role of Svar in our discussion of Tamei HaMitzvos. Now, yes?
If you're assuming, that the Kodesh Baruch Hu is not over our Amos, then really, all of nature also is coming into Torah, so you don't really have that question either.
Yes. Well, that's exactly the point that I wish to make. Excellent. The reason why the notion that HaKadosh, saying that there's an ethic independent of halacha, let's say you were to take that position, whether before Matan Torah or after Matan Torah, it doesn't really matter. The reason why a person is capable of independently deducing that which is right and that which is wrong, even without revelation, is precisely because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the tools to do so. In other words, this too is coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not something that exists independent of halacha. Independent of Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's the difference between the first two questions. There is no ethic independent of God, but if there is an ethic that's beyond or independently derivable, beyond the Torah, that's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the tools to do so. In other words, it's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Ki Hashem yiten chachma mipiv das usvuna. If we figure out something on our own, it's not like it's truly on our own. It's coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it doesn't exist independently of God, and therefore it's in no way a contradiction of the notion that Ein Od Milvado. And that's what we're saying. That's why the two questions have nothing to do with each other. The first question is there any ethic independent of God? The answer is no, Ein Od Milvado. There's nothing independent of God. The second question is, can you derive that which is ethical without revelation? The answer is yes. But that's not because it's independent of God. That's because God gives you the tool to discover it on your own. Mipiv das usfuna. Yes?
Couldn't people try to do that and get the world outside of the world and come up with a conclusion?
Absolutely. One of the great issues of natural morality is that my natural morality might not be your natural morality, and oftentimes there's no clear way to determine that which is right. And as I said, I'd like to return to that question a little bit later on.
Like when it says, does that mean that you never learn from anyone but Hashem?
No, I don't think so. That means that it does imply that that should be the basis of our understanding. At the very least, what it means is that that should be, that's the mechayev of being a rachum, right? How do I know it's a mitzvah in the Torah to be a rachum? Because the Torah says, halachta b'drachav, v'chi esher lidabek b'shchina, elamahu rachum, af atar rachum. That's the mechayev. That doesn't mean that that's the exclusive place from which we could learn it. Yes?
Do we have any source that precludes the possibility of the Ribbono Shel Olam giving the system of ethics to the nation?
Absolutely not. In fact, what you see... Well, as I said, I'd like to discuss it further. The Pasha Pshat is that all he gave them explicitly, meaning to say through revelation, is the Sheva Mitzvos B'nei Noach. Now, he expected them to understand independently that there are things that are right and wrong beyond that, as we see from the story of the destruction of stone. And, in fact, you could say that that is an independent mechayev, or it's somewhat subsumed under dinim. If you look at the Ramban's understanding of what's included in dinim, it means to come up with laws to create an ethical society, and dinim can include onah, for example. Yes? Explicitly, in the sense that they asked the question, not that I'm aware of, though. That's the lo ra'isi eno raya klau. But again, according to the Rav, at least the Rambam was alluding to that question over here. Now, yes.
I didn't exactly understand the question.
You're saying that the two sides were source for ethics. The two sides are: there's an ethic independent of God, which is wrong. Or B, divine command ethics, which means to say that it's only ethical because God said so. And that would imply that God could do whatever he wants. It implies a, at least as understood by some, is that it's almost capricious, right? But the answer is that Tzadik v'yashar hu, he's inherently ethical. And therefore, but it's not something that's independent of him. I'll bring that out with the following point, and then I'll take your question. We said, for example, that there's nothing independent of God. Now, does that mean to say that, for example, the Rambam writes, according to the Rav, that there's no independent existence, even an ethical code or the like? So does that mean that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could do something that's illogical, or because he's not held accountable to anything else, right? There's nothing that exists independently of him, including a system of logic. So therefore, logic does not bind HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is a very important question, and it relates to the nature of omnipotence. When we call HaKadosh Baruch Hu a kol yachol, that he's all capable, he's all powerful, what does that mean? One way in which kids like to ask the question is, can God create a rock that he can't lift? So, the answer to this question is no, he can't. Why not? The Rambam writes, and you could take a look in page 9 again, footnote 1. This is from the Mor Nevuchim, Chelek Gimel, Perek Tes Vav. That which is impossible has a permanent and constant property, which is not the result of some agent and cannot change in any way, and consequently, we do not ascribe to God the power of doing what is impossible. No thinking man denies the truth of this maxim, none ignore it, but such as have no idea of logic. Meaning to say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can't do that which contradicts logic. This does not in any way oppose omnipotence, because the idea of omnipotence, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a kol yachol, really means that he could do anything that's theoretically possible. he could do anything that's conceivably possible. It does not mean to say he could do anything that's possible. As the Rambam writes, no thinking person would ever imagine such an idea. For example, nobody would say that God could destroy himself. Why? Because God's existence is necessary. As the Rambam here writes, and he's going to elaborate, it's inconceivable that God does not exist. God's existence is necessary. It's not an accidental existence. This pen happens to exist, but it could not exist. It didn't exist before, might not exist tomorrow. It happens to exist. God's existence is not accidental. It's necessary. It's inconceivable otherwise. It could be proven to be necessary. And thus, it contradicts logic to say that he could destroy himself. So when we say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu lacks the power to destroy himself, does that contradict omnipotence? Absolutely not, because omnipotence means he could do anything that's theoretically possible. God is necessarily one, and therefore he could not destroy himself into two. So if we say that it's impossible for there to be a physical existing body that God could not lift, so then that's definitional, because he's Kol Yachol, so therefore he could not create such a thing. But that doesn't contradict omnipotence, because it doesn't in any way imply a deficiency in God. The fact that he cannot destroy himself does not imply a deficiency. And if you think that maybe it's just the Rambam and the philosophers that said something like this, there's a Tshuvas HaRashba Chelek Dalet Simen Reish Lamed Dalet that more or less makes the same point and actually goes further than the Rambam. You could see this Rashba on the top of page 10. Ve'etzli shnei chalakim benimna. When we say something is impossible, the Rashba says, there's really two categories of impossibilities. Ha'achad, ha'achrechi, v'yayashar mitzad atzmo. Lios tzel ha'miruba, gadol mi'alachsono. So the first is that which is inherently necessary and logical. For example, to say that the side of a square equals its diagonals. Oh, ma shehaya shelo haya v'harbe kiyotzi bazeh, or to say that something that exists doesn't exist or the like. This is a logical impossibility or a mathematical impossibility, and that is the first category of impossibilities. V'hasheni lo mitzad atzmo ela mitzidenu. The second type of impossibility is not something that's inherently impossible, but something that we simply aren't capable of doing or don't know how to do. So I might say that it's impossible to cause water to come spurting forth from a rock. It's impossible not in the sense that it's inherently impossible, it's impossible in the sense that I have no idea how to do it, or I'm not powerful enough to do it. So the Rashba says that when it comes to the first possibility, first type of impossibility, so that even God cannot do. So God cannot make something exist and not exist simultaneously. God cannot make the diagonal of a square longer than the sides of it, longer than the two sides of the square, or the sides of the square as long as a diagonal of the square. That is a logical impossibility or a mathematical impossibility. And it's not a problem to say that God is unable to do so. Whereas when it comes to the second form of impossibility, like the notion of causing a rock to spurt forth water, that is not an inherent possibility, it's just a practical impossibility. We don't know how to do it, we're not strong enough to do it. And to say that God is incapable of doing that is absolutely wrong. Now, the Rashba is saying it because there were some rationalists at the time. There are a number of tshuvos in the Rashba where he critiques the Chachmei Provence, and that relates to the Haramim that he authored prohibiting philosophy. Maybe this is a topic we could get back to another time. And they actually go ahead and say that even what we call miracles are impossible for God, and they have all sorts of naturalistic readings of various portions of Tanakh. Ralbag doesn't go that far, but he does go ahead and take a lot of the things that we consider nisim and interpret them in somewhat naturalistic fashions. That's a different story. But anyway, the Rashba says that when it comes to the first category of impossibilities, even God can't do those, and that's what the Rambam writes. No rational being would ever disagree with that. Whereas when it comes to the second category of impossibilities, so then certainly to imply that God is incapable of doing that, that would be a contradiction of omnipotence. Now, this idea doesn't contradict the idea of the Rav from Perek Aleph of Hilchos Yesodei HaTorah, because we are not saying that there exists an independent system which exists independently of God and therefore limits God, but it's part of God. And it doesn't exist independently. It's not like there's an existence of logic and logic limits God. That would indeed be a contradiction of Achdus Hashem. But rather, God, in his essence, is rational and logical and kind and just and the like, leaving aside the issues of positive characteristics. We could say he's not Achzari. That is part of who he is. It doesn't exist independently of God, and therefore it's not a limitation. Now, I don't think that you have to go as far as the Rashba. For example, I think given contemporary understandings of mathematics, you don't necessarily have to say that geometric impossibilities are beyond the capability of God's violating. You don't have to say in all possible worlds the sides of a square are greater than its diagonal, but that's a separate question. I'll take some questions. I just want to make afterwards one more point on this topic, but yes.
Before we were talking about Bechir Choshu and Ashkacha, we said mm-hmm. one of the ideas was that Hashem doesn't fit into this like either or thing, and he can be outside of that, even though for us, like our intellect. So I guess how does that fit with this? You're saying
okay, so
logic is not outside of Hashem.
This is an excellent question. It's a very fair point. And I think you're absolutely correct. It bears stating. We're going to talk about a little later, probably next week, the notion that we can't understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu's essence. We could only understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu insofar as he relates to us. As the Medrash says, you can't understand who I am. All you could understand is through my shemos, through the way in which I relate to the world. And that being the case, it's true that it seems to be extremely presumptuous for us to say that God is limited by logic. Logic is something which we derived, it's not even in the Torah, it's something that we derived using our seichel. And therefore, you're correct. I think that perhaps a more appropriate way to say it is that if it is the case that the rules of logic are necessary, meaning to say they don't just exist within our universe, but they're necessary, then it wouldn't be a problem to say that God is incapable of violating them because they're not something that exists independently of God. In other words, if the Rashba were to be shown, no, it's possible in some other dimension to say that 2 plus 2 equals 5, so the Rashba would have no problem with that. We're the ones that came up with it, and we, as you point out, are limited to our own experience, and our own experience is within this universe, and it's really impossible for us to conceive of existence outside of our universe, right? This parenthetically, though, does relate back to our discussion about Yediyin Bechira. If you recall, we mentioned that there are some Rishonim and Achronim who assume that it is a contradiction, and therefore they limit God's Yediyah, and we said, how could you say that? It contradicts omniscience. God knows the future. So there are certain makaros that do imply that God knows the future, but at least in its own right, if it's the case that there's a contradiction between foreknowledge and free will, and we know that there is free will, then to say that there isn't foreknowledge isn't a contradiction of omniscience, because it's categorically impossible, if you say it's categorically impossible. Now, as we saw then, most Rishonim and Achronim assume it's not categorically impossible. But if you actually came to the conclusion it's categorically impossible, it might not be problematic to say that therefore God can't do it. Yes?
How does Rashi deal with the fact that Aaron and the Heichal was in a
So he would say that that's a limitation of space, and God can certainly is above space and can contradict space. That's not a mathematical impossibility. The Rishonim basically say that there are three general categories of impossibilities that might be inviolable even by God, and those are contraventions of logic, mathematics, and philosophy. It's not a contravention of mathematics to say that it appears, because it's Eino Min HaMinyan. It's not... But as I said, I don't think that's mochrach to say this. The point more that I want to bring out is, if it's true, then it's not a problem. It might not be true. We can never really know whether logic is something that's just a function of our universe, or whether logic is something that's inherently true, because we can't conceive of things outside of our universe. But if it were the case that it is necessarily true and exists beyond our universe, it wouldn't be problematic to say that God cannot contradict logic. Yes?
How do we know that the Rashi's not saying the first idea, that in the way we experience God, which is the only way we're able to...
It doesn't sound
God,
like that's what he's saying.
Meaning, you think he's saying that... Because, like, there are no squares.
Otherwise, there's no distinction between the first two categories. Anyway, I don't think so. You can read it carefully. I don't think that's what he's saying. There's actually also another tshuva.
In this world, even Hashem can make water flow out of a rock. But Hashem wouldn't go again.
Wouldn't or couldn't? The Rashba seems to say couldn't.
Hashem could not make water
flow out of a rock? No, he could make water flow out of the rock. He couldn't contravene the first category of impossibility.
Right, because he bound himself to...
So you could take that approach. I'm not saying it's an illegitimate approach. It doesn't strike me that that's what the Rashba is saying. I think the Rashba sounds like he's saying it's impossible.
I'm just a little confused how we could say that God is confined by logic in who God, in what or whatever God is.
Could God destroy himself?
The way I understand God, my relationship with God, no. But I'm saying...
I'm not saying your approach is illegitimate. I'm pointing out that the Rishonim have more faith in logic than you do, and right. No, and that's part of it. Actually, I'm not. Contemporary philosophy is different, but the Rishonim had more faith in logic than you do, and therefore they felt that logic is inherently true, and therefore it's not a problem to...
Why is that not a limitation of God?
Because it's part of his essence.
Right, but don't we not understand his essence?
So that's the question that you've asked. They assumed that it's true, we can't fully understand his essence, but we are... If we can presume that we're correct when we come to the conclusion that something is logically impossible and therefore by definition impossible. In other words, it's not just when we say something can't exist and not exist simultaneously, or when we say A equals B and B equals C, so A equals C, that's not just because we can't think of a way to make A not equal C, even though A equals B and B equals C, but that's something that's inherently true. That's at least the approach that the Rishonim seem to be taking.
As a negative characteristic that
if you want, you could put it that way.
Otherwise, everybody agrees you can't put a positive characteristic.
We'll talk about that.
Okay.
I just want to see one more manifestation of this point in the Chazon Ish. Since I keep on saying it's the Rishonim that make this point, but the Chazon Ish makes this point as well, and he uses it in a very interesting way. And this, too, can be found on page 10. The Chazon Ish writes, this is in the missing section of Emunah and Bitachon after section 1, Perek Aleph Halacha, or section Sifkat and Tes. Now, in the newer versions of the Chazon Ish, they put this back in, at least in the back. Anyhow, I don't know exactly why it was taken out and why it was put back. The Chazon Ish is addressing an important question, which is that if God's existence is necessary, put it this way, one way to prove the existence of God is to say that there's no other conceivable explanation for the existence of our universe other than God. In other words, why else would we exist? We know we exist. We know the world exists. We know something exists. There could be nothing that accounts for that existence other than God. That's, in a certain sense, the most basic cosmological proof. There has to be some cause, some reason for existence. So some ask the following question on that proof. V'yesh mi ba'alei dimyon, Hashalim, ma narviach im naskim sheyesh lehaolam mamzi. Acharei sheheninu machruchim lahaskim shabore olam nimtza. Ve'en lahaschal aso umetzi uso nitzchis. Ve'harei hadra koshi leduchta. Eich efshar lenimtza belo havaya. Meaning to say, so how do we answer the question? We say that the world exists and therefore there must be something that caused it to come into existence. Because it's inconceivable that it always existed. Something must be the cause. If it exists, something must be the cause for its existence. So we say, what's the cause? God. Well, then what's the cause of God's existence? And if we're happy saying, no, God always existed, so why can't we just simply say that the universe always existed? Now, there might be scientific objections to that, and according to contemporary science, it does seem like that there was a beginning. But leaving those aside, from a purely philosophical perspective, what could you answer? And the Chazon Ish says, no. Aval ein ledimyon bina, ki kol nimtza sheyesh mida v'ketzev, orech v'shetach, shetach, anu mitzayrim b'datenu ha'adro. Anything that has physical limitations, it has a size or the like, so we could imagine its non-existence. In fact, because there's a place where it doesn't exist. This table is only exists here, it doesn't exist there. We could imagine its non-existence. V'chol ha-nimtza'im b'sug hazeh b'achrech sheyesh le-metziusam v'yesh lahem haschala v'chol sheyesh haschala yesh lo havaya v'chol sheyesh lo havaya yesh lo mehaveh. This is essentially, if you are familiar with it, he's referring to the proof for the existence of God that could be found in the Shahar Yuchad of the Chovos HaLevavos. But basically, that since it doesn't exist in certain places, it must have been brought into existence, and if it's brought into existence, there must be a God, there must be a first cause. However, aval yesh nimtzaim she'en lahem lo mida v'lo shetach v'hen nimtzaim b'chiyuv v'lo yitzuyar bahem hadar v'hen ha-muskalos. When it comes to muskalos, which are non-physical things, the existence of muskalos are not limited by space or place, and they could not exist. Their existence is necessary. It's inconceivable that they wouldn't exist. Kimo, beis pamim beis hem dalet, like 2 times 2 is 4. It's not like that is a reality that was created, but it's something which is necessary. Ukimo muskal shalachson odef al haorech ukiyotzi bahen. Here you see he's invoking the Rashba. These are totally non-physical. And they always exist. And that's the nature of God. Ayin Shem, he continues. A very important piece. Okay. So to summarize, and I'd like to, I was hoping to get past Halacha Aleph. To summarize, what we've seen in Halacha Aleph is 2 points. We've focused on, there's much more that could be said. But we focused on 2 points. Number one is Leida Sheyesh Matsui Rishon, that the mitzvah, the Rambam of Emuna, and this is also Chelok of Ava and Talmud Torah and the 5 first mitzvos, is Yediya. This is something which can be proven in a sense that it has a Maisa mitzvah. We also talked about the limitations that a person has to have the appropriate background before engaging and studying these types of things, and the debate as to what exactly the appropriate background that is necessary to study the Pardes. Then we talked about the implication of the Rambam that God is the cause for all existence. Ein od milvado, this implies that there's no existence of an ethic independent of God. We said this is different than the question of whether or not there's an ethic independent of halacha. An ethic independent of halacha doesn't contradict this notion, because the ethic that exists independent of halacha too emanates from God. All wisdom that we have emanates from God. Then we talked about whether the possibility exists that God is bound by logic, that the Rishonim don't seem to see this as troubling, because it's not something that's an independent existence outside of God. It's something that's necessary. We talked about, if that's the case, omnipotence doesn't mean to say that he could do anything, but that he could do anything theoretically possible. Halacha base. V'im ya'ale al hadas shehu eino matzoi ein davar acher yachol lehimatzos. If it were to be the case that he does not exist, then nothing else can exist. Now, this does not mean to say that a person is allowed to imagine God doesn't exist. Later on, he's about, where we'll read, he says, V'chol ha-ma'alel dato she'yesh sham Eloha acher chutz mizeh over below sase she'namar lo yeh l'cha Elohim acherim al panai. So if somebody were to imagine that God doesn't exist, they're in violation of one of the Ten Commandments. What he means to say here is that this is an actual proof for the existence of God, meaning to say, one way to prove God's existence is to say that if God didn't exist, nothing could exist. In other words, if lo ya'alel hadas, God does not exist, then nothing else could exist, and we know something does exist, so therefore it must be the case that God exists. That's what he means to do over here. So he's not violating lo ya'alel Elohim achirim. You don't really think so. It's rather a proof, a method of proving the existence of God. Now we should note that in these first two halachos, he refers to a mamtzi, hu mamtzi kol hanimtza. Why does he not say hu bara kol hanimtza? That's an important question which we will get to later on today or probably next week. Vim ya'alel hadas she'ein kol hanimtzaim milvado mitzuyin, hu levado yiyah matzoi, velo yivatel hu levitulam. So if it were to be the case that all existences would cease to exist, he alone would exist, and he would not be negated by their negation. Shekol nimtzaim tzrichin lo, because all existents need him, v'hu baruchu eino tzarich lo lahem v'lo la'achad mehem. However, he himself does not need them, or not need any of them. Lefikach ein amitaso ke'amitas achad mehem. Therefore, his truth is not like their truth. Now, what does it mean, his truth is not like their truth? If it's true, it's true. If it's not true, it's not true. What do we mean to say that his truth is not like their truth? So here, what the Rambam is alluding to is a very simple philosophical distinction. There are things that are necessarily true, and there are things that are accidentally true. It is true that this pen exists. However, that is not necessarily true. It's conceivable otherwise. At one point, this pen didn't exist. In another point in the future, it's not going to exist. It happens to be that it exists. So that's what we mean when we say accidentally true. Not accident like I slipped on a banana, but accident in the sense that it's not necessary. It doesn't have to be. So the truth of the existence of all other existence is accidental. It doesn't have to be. It's not necessary. Whereas the truth of his existence is necessarily true. It is necessary. It's inconceivable otherwise. And he proves that. He's going to prove that here in Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah, and at length he proves that in the Mor Nevuchim. So that's what we mean to say, that the truth of our existence, or the truth of any existence other than that of God, is not like the truth of his existence. His existence is necessary, whereas our existence is accidental. Hu shehanavi omer, v'Hashem Elokim emes. This is what the pasuk means when it says, and God is true. Hu levado emes, he alone is the truth. Ve'en la'acher emes kamitaso. There is no other truth like his truthfulness, meaning to say there is no other necessary truth other than him, or no other necessary existent other than him. V'hu shatora umeres ein od milvado. This is exactly what it means when we say ein od milvado. Ein od milvado does not mean to say that nothing else exists besides him. Now, perhaps in certain Hasidic thought or Kabbalistic thought, that might be the approach. Les asar panui minei. Even that, though, is not the mainstream position. Ein od milvado does not mean that nothing else exists. Ein od milvado means nothing else necessarily exists, or all existence depends upon his existence. And in that sense, there's nothing besides him. Kilomar, ein sham matzui emes milvado kamoso. There is no other necessary existent except for him. Now, the Rambam, and therefore all other existence depends upon his existence. Now, that's something that I think nobody debates. There might be a debate about the nature of how that's true. For example, if you look at Nefesh HaChaim, we have here the expert in Nefesh HaChaim, so I feel embarrassed about Rabbi Lenny Moskowitz just translated the Neftah Chaim into English. This is a pitch. It's right here. So I certainly don't am not an expert. But the way the Neftah Chaim, for example, explains it is that the existence of everything else is dependent on his willing it to exist constantly. Mechadish betuvo b'chol yom tamid ma'aseh v'reishis. In other words, the only reason why anything continues to exist is because he's constantly willing it to exist. And in that sense, creation is, as it were, recreated every moment, every instant. The Rambam does not go that far. He describes such a position in Emor Nevuchim. There were certain Kalam philosophers who accepted that position, and the Rambam thinks that's incorrect. So the Rambam doesn't understand, seemingly is arguing with the Nefesh HaChaim, he doesn't think that if God were to stop willing existence to exist for a moment, it would stop. But certainly the Rambam agrees that the basis for all existence is his willing it to exist, in the sense that if they are dependent upon his existence, there is no independent existence besides his existence. Yes?
I'm just wondering if the Rambam goes into detail as to what defines existence.
Yes, he does. So in the in the first section of the guide, there are a number of chapters upon this, on this point, and it relates to a much broader topic. This question of whether you need to be mechadish b'chol yom, mechadish b'tuvah b'chol yom tamid, ma'aseh v'reishis, literally or not, depends on a broader question, which is the nature of motion, and whether motion is made out of discrete parts, and whether time is made out of discrete parts, or whether it's constant, and the like. And I don't know if I understand his whole discussion about that, but to try to explain it is a unit in its own right. And it's not something that's so important for us nowadays, but the Rambam does go into great detail about this question. Okay. Yes?
Maybe I don't understand. Rambam says that the basis for everything's existence is originally from our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But then if HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't will it to exist, doesn't that mean he wants it to die?
No. It's a subtle point. Then perhaps you could even argue that there isn't a dispute, but the answer is: Do you need to be mechadish betuva b'chol yom tamid, or no? That everything exists because he wills it to exist, but he set up the existence, and now it will continue to exist until he decides to stop it from existing. It's like the difference between a TV monitor in which you press it and it turns on, and it will stay on until you turn it off, or something that will only remain on as long as you're pressing it. Now, one could certainly make the case that it's a totally irrelevant distinction, because since, practically speaking, it only exists because he caused it to come into existence, and should he wish for it to stop existing, it would stop existing, then it doesn't really matter whether or not it's constantly being regenerated or not. The Rambam thought that was a relevant distinction, but the pashtus is, it might not be particularly important.
Well, even if you want to say that it's a constant, but by fact that HaKadosh doesn't say at that moment that I'm going to stop the existence, therefore that shows that at every single minute HaKadosh Baruch Hu is deciding that I'm going to allow it to continue.
Yes, I think presumably that's what the Rambam would say is what the pasuk means.
No, I'm saying that's
you're saying that's no different than the Nefesh HaChaim.
What's the chiluf? I mean, the Nefesh HaChaim might say,
I understand. The Rambam felt that there was a distinction between those two possibilities. But on a simple level, I agree with you. It doesn't seem like it's significant. Okay. Yes?
Last week we discussed how the Rambam didn't have access to Torah Sesod in the same way that other people did.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that he has a different explanation of a lot of these things. And I'll be like, but right now we're seeing verse Nefesh HaChaim. Does that have to do with his...
Absolutely. Yes, it's certainly a reflection of that point. Just to clarify that idea, since I mentioned it last week, and perhaps it wasn't so clear. The Rambam was shown certain passages from Sifrei Chalos or the like, from Taras HaSod, and he saw them and he said that they were kfira. And that's not surprising, because if anyone is to look at Torah Sasod without the proper background, without recognizing that there is a tradition, there is a Masorah, there is a Kabbalah for that, so then it looks like absolute heresy. Things, texts that talk about God's arms and God's head and his left side and his right side and his top and his bottom and all sorts of things of that nature. And if you don't understand, if A, there's not a tradition for that, and B, you don't understand how to read it and what it means, so then it's not at all surprising that that type of idea would be viewed as heretical. And that's why there is a requirement before studying Torah Sasod to have the proper background, just as there's a requirement before studying philosophy or the like to have an appropriate background. Okay, we'll stop here, and Be'ezras Hashem, we'll pick up next week from Halacha. Hey, everyone, have a wonderful Shabbos.